Welcome to part two of what is an optimum diet. And so where were we up to?
Seeds,
okay. And we talked about what the best seeds are and the fact that seeds are an essential part of an optimal diet. Except for, I would say, if you're going through a period of cleansing. And if you're cleansing, then you'll want to reduce your fats intake. So you'll probably want to reduce your nuts and seeds if you're doing a particular type of cleanse. But with the exception of if you're doing a cleanse, which otherwise known as a detox, I would really make nuts and seeds the central part of the calories of your diet. Okay, so yeah, the central bulk of your diet would be vegetable matter like greens, whether that be bulky greens or whether that be in the form of juices or smoothies or whatever. And the essential where you get most of your calories from, I'd say nuts and seeds. With the exception of, and this is our last and most important category, and that would be superfoods. So, what is a superfood? The definition that I give is that a superfood is nutritionally dense. So, that means that it's the exact opposite of empty calories. So, there's only a certain amount that the person can eat during the day, right? And there's only a certain amount of space that you have. And also, the less you eat, the better, ideally, like we said, optimally. So, ideally, you would be getting as much nutrition as possible from as little quantity as possible, right?
Sure.
So this is the category that superfoods tend to fit into, and that's why ultimately we want our diet to be higher and higher in superfoods. Another thing that superfoods tend to be is they tend to be wild, although not always. They tend to not be cultivated, at least in soil, which is very depleted. So there's exceptions to that, which we'll go through. They tend to be time-proven. So whereas a lot of these sort of supplements or fatty new foods are basically fads, they're untested, superfoods tend to be ones that have been used for a very long time and everyone knows that they work. Superfoods also tend to be so beneficial for the health, they tend to be in the category of almost being medicinal. I'm not sure if you're aware of what that means, but what I mean is that they'll actually help with any health problems that you might have. So they'll actually help to relieve symptoms, and they're not just a maintaining level of healthy, but they're actually a retain or rekindle your vitality level of healthy.
Sure, so, and they may be prescribed as such, but not necessarily thought to be used in an everyday sense.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, we can't use the word prescribed because we're not qualified medical practitioners, but yeah, we can't recommend, you know, we can recommend them for people if they have specific issues. Then,
well, I was thinking more in terms of, like, Chinese practicing doctors.
Okay.
Such, like, they may prescribe you one such substance.
Yeah.
As something to help alleviate your symptoms that you may be experiencing when you go there.
Yes.
But you would not necessarily think to use it every day in your tea.
No, I get your meaning. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So just because your symptoms have abated doesn't mean that you're not going to get a massive amount of benefit from continuing to use the particular superfood or
herb. Yeah.
Definitely. Very good point. So another, which brings me perfectly on to my next point about superfoods, which is that they are foods which it's fine, in fact, excellent to have every single day. So just as Taoist tonic herbs are different from medicinal herbs in that medicinal herbs are something you'd only use for a short period of time for a specific purpose, and they can actually be poisonous or at least toxic if you use too many of them. Superfoods are foods which are tonic in the sense that they're excellent to use in large quantities every day. You don't have to use all of them every day, of course, but what I'm saying is that you can have a lot of them every day and you're
as
not going to be overdoing it.
As many as you can afford.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, as much as it ultimately suits you as well, that's another qualifier.
Sure.
I mean, something like, say, the green algae superfoods like spirulina or chlorella. For some people like myself, I mean, I may have 4 or 5 tablespoons of chlorella in a day and feel very good with that, but for a lot of people, a teaspoon would be plenty, and not just because of the taste, but because any more would overwhelm them. So
I'm running with the taste on that one.
listen to your body, you know, and if your body does have an aversion to any of the superfoods or any of the optimal foods I recommend, in fact, then just don't eat it. You know, don't try and force anything down, which is goes against your bodily instinct about what to eat. Just, I believe I've given you enough of a selection of different types of foods here, and will do, that you can pick and choose those which suit you, and you can eat a diet which is 100% optimal, 100% of the time, and yet not eat anything you don't like. Because there's a huge amount of different foods in the world. So let's just say I've given you a list of, you know, I haven't named them all, but out of categories, there's at least like 100 different types of food. Let's say you only like 12 of them, okay, and 88 you don't like. Still, out of those 12, most people eat 80% of the same foods, 80% of the time anyway, right? It's always wheat, corn, dairy, beef, chicken, rice, soy. That's 7 off the top of my head. There's a few more. These are like the basic things that we eat every day with almost every meal, okay? So rather than having this going on with foods which are actually really bad for us, which pretty much all those foods I just mentioned are, we can do the same thing with all the foods which are optimal, which really suit us. You know, I mean, obviously, ideally, you have a large selection of different cuts of food, but it's most appropriate to just eat the foods which are optimal, which you really like. And you'll find if you do that, you'll start to get a taste for the other foods that are optimal, which you couldn't stand the sight or thought of before.
And ultimately, we're creatures of habit, so, you know, we're a bit lazy with these things. So you find something you like and you stick with it for a while. Basically, then you get bored and you find something else you like and you stick with that for a while.
And the only thing I'd say to add to that, it's a really great point, is that if you do that with the optimal food approach, then when you get bored of whatever those that food is or those small group of foods are, because you're used to optimal foods, you'll tend to suddenly gain interest in other optimal foods rather than going back to junk foods. Have you found that in your experience?
Yeah, absolutely.
So let's dive straight into it. Now, superfoods. The number one superfood, and what I like to call the gateway superfood, is raw chocolate.
Yeah, man. That's a favorite. How I got raw and stayed raw.
A favourite among all the ladies, definitely, but I think all the men have to admit that they love it too. Raw chocolate is immensely nutritious. It's the highest feed known to man in the aforementioned magnesium. It's also really high in lots of other really essential alkaline minerals like iron, copper, zinc. But that's not the main thing going for it. Some of the other main things going for it are that it's incredibly high in antioxidants. 10% polyphenols, one of the highest foods in the world in antioxidants. Antioxidants, just very briefly, are the colouring in food. Every time a food has a very deep colour or a very strong colour, like carrots or beetroot or green and chlorophyll, the green chlorophyll in plant foods, that is an antioxidant. And what an antioxidant does is it protects your body from free radical damage. Free radicals are when electrons get spun off on their own and they just go around basically causing trouble, unless you have something that's going to neutralize them. And
little gangster dudes.
yeah, little troublemakers and just wild cards, and antioxidants help to just contain them and then eventually get them out and get them to stop causing any trouble. That's the scientific explanation. We won't go into a lot of detail about it, but that's a nice narrative way of looking at them. So, highest food source of those, raw chocolate. Raw chocolate is also really high in substance called PEA. Can't remember what the abbreviation stands for right now. Phenylamine ethylamine. PEA is a substance which is very similar to how you feel like you're in love. So, it's a love dump sort of feeling. It helps to make you feel more connected with other people, the world around you. So that's where a lot of the appeal of chocolate comes from. It also contains something that's called anandamine. Ananda is a Hindu word similar to bliss. So it's also, it basically means like a bliss chemical. And it's also very high in something called theobromine, which is a stimulant and a vasodilator. Now, how you respond to stimulants depends largely on whether raw chocolate is an optimal food for you. Personally, because of my constitution, I'm from a Taoist point of view, a hot-hearted type, from an Ayurvedic point of view, a Pitta type. This sort of person doesn't respond very well to stimulants, basically. They get hyper-stimulated. And so for me, a food that contains a stimulant like theobromine called raw chocolate is not so appropriate. For the majority of people, though, I think that raw chocolate is actually an excellent superfood because of all the substances previously mentioned it contains, so long as a person isn't very sensitive to the stimulant aspect of it. Theobromine, as well as being a stimulant, is also a vasodilator, which means that it expands the blood vessels, which is excellent for people who tend to get very very stressed, people who tend to have high blood pressure. It just releases that pressure in the blood vessels. It also is excellent and has always traditionally been used as a carrier agent to take all sorts of other medicinal substances, like all the tonic herbs, into the bloodstream more effectively. So if you're having, you know, a tonic tea, a piece of raw chocolate with it actually works really well, because the raw chocolate will really open up the blood vessels, the arteries, the capillaries, and allow you to absorb that goodness a lot more effectively and a lot more easily.
On the whole, I mean, I wouldn't have been able to go raw had it not been for raw chocolate, because all these vegetables and stuff, you know, it's all very well, but give us the chocolate. However, after a time of being raw and being on a very kind of pure green diet, I found the stimulant in chocolate to be quite obvious, whereas previously I wasn't. It's partly because of my previous massive addiction to coffee and cigarettes that my kidneys and adrenals have been weakened to such a degree that I do feel it so strongly. And if I do eat a lot of it, I do notice bags under my eyes straight away from adrenal and kidney stress. So I do think it's something to be enjoyed, but very much see how it affects you personally before you go off on a raw chocolate indulgent session.
That's a really good point, and that's true for all of the foods we mentioned, by the way. You know, you should always, whatever anyone else said, see how your body actually responds. But just bear in mind, first of all, that the body never responds very well to change, no matter how good that change is for you. So this is not quite in response to your point. This is kind of a different point. But so if you try and stop doing something that's obviously incredibly bad for you, whether it be taking heroin or smoking or eating junk food, or whether you start to do something which is obviously healthy for you, like eating vegetables, to begin with, the body always objects. The body doesn't like change, especially from a Taoist point of view. If the liver is sluggish, the liver is particularly resistant to change. So the healthier the liver is, in fact, the more easily you can adapt and respond to changes in the environment or internally. But no matter how healthy you are, to begin with, everything is a stress. So if you try some of these new foods that we're recommending, these superfoods, and you know you get some kind of upset or whatever, then don't be put off, because that may just be because your body is resistant to any change. If, however, like you just described, after, say, a few months of having something, you start to notice that actually it's not really doing me personally any favours, then, by all means, you're absolutely spot on. You know, if you've given it a chance, say, I think a month is a good period to allow your body to acclimatise, but if after, say, 2 months you've been eating food and you're noticing it's having a negative effect on you, then I'd say definitely discontinue use. Maybe you can always try and reintroduce it at some other point in the future.
Yeah, or use it to its strengths. I mean, if I haven't had enough sleep and I've got to look after the children or do something like that, have a bit of raw chocolate and off you go. Well, hey!
Well, that's it, because like you said before, it's all about getting things in perspective. So compared to a coffee, you know, okay, so compared to a line of cocaine, a coffee is really healthy. Compared to a coffee, a line of raw chocolate is really healthy. You know?
Yeah.
And compared to raw chocolate,
green juice is really healthy.
So it's all a matter of perspective, you know, and you just got to look at always not what should you do, but what will you realistically do. So like you say, if you're going to go out for the night, and if you're not already buzzing, you're going to be tempted by some sort of illicit substance, then definitely have some more chocolate before you go. Or if you need to get going in the morning and you know that otherwise you're going to be tempted to have a latte on the way to work, then definitely have some more chocolate. But if that's not the case, then don't. And also, I'd say use these things in moderation. Just because, like, a whole raw chocolate bar might disagree with you doesn't mean that, say, 2 grams of the cacao powder in your smoothie will. And that's personally how I use raw chocolate. I'll just use a very small amount and use it as a vasodilator. So it is a delivery system for all the other herbs that I have in my superfood smoothie in the morning. And I'll just stick with it and use it that way. So, you know, really experiment. Always be willing to play with these things and realize that you are unique, and not just you are unique, but you know, you will change as well. So what was at one point a poison to you may at another point become a panacea, and vice versa. I know that there are some people who, you know, claim to be so healthy and so free of toxins and their adrenals and kidneys are so strong because they've been on this health journey for a long time that they don't have any negative effects from raw chocolate. I haven't experienced that personally, but I'm perfectly open to the possibility that that's the case as well.
Yeah.
So
absolutely,
we just need to be, you know, open to what our body is really telling us, with the exception, as I say, of just remembering that it hates all change. So give it a chance. So what's the next category, or the next substance? Next superfood I'm going to talk about is goji berries. Again, very popular. One of the things that makes goji berries an amazing superfood is that they're so easy to eat, just like raw chocolate. Pretty delicious. They look like little chilies. They have a sort of very slightly spicy taste to them.
In fact, combined with raw chocolate is marvellous.
Absolutely. They are a tonic herb. They're also part of the Daoist tonic herbal system, as well as being a superfood. They're pretty much the number one superfood from the Daoist Chinese medicine perspective. From a scientific perspective, they are very high in... they stimulate the release of human growth hormone, one of the only foods it does. And human growth hormone doesn't just relate to growth, it also relates to the repair of all your bodily tissues. So in terms of beauty and longevity, they're really amazing. And I recommend that everyone eat a handful of goji berries every day, whether that's in the form of with chocolate, in a smoothie, an extract powder or whatever.
Can I just point out with goji berries, try and get them organic because they are pesticided right up otherwise.
Yes, thank you for that. And that's a really important point that hasn't been mentioned yet. Thank you very much for bringing that up. With all these things, try and get them organic. It's really worth getting them organic.
Particularly vegetables, because non-organic ones just taste rubbish.
Particularly vegetables and fruit, and I want to give a number of reasons for this. It's not just because of the pesticides on there. This is the first thing that I want to bring up that's important. Now, these pesticides are obviously bad, but a lot of people are like, well, you know, there's probably more poisons in my cigarette than in a whole day's worth of non-organic food, so why should I be bothered? Which is a reasonable point. The reason why you should still be bothered, even if you are still smoking or drinking or whatever, about these pesticides, is because it's not only the damage that the pesticides do to you, it's also the fact that non-organic foods are grown in soil which is far more likely to be severely depleted. So they're far more likely to be empty calories. So organic foods, not only are they not sprayed in pesticides, but they're also grown in organic compost, right? Or organic soil. Now, organic soil is much higher in nutrients. So the food that you're eating is much higher in nutrients, if it's organic. Right, and it's even higher if it's wild. It's even higher if it's a wild superfood, okay? Which is why we left the best to last of the superfood category. But just go back to the organic thing. The most common objection to buying organic food is that it's all very well for you, but it's too expensive, I can't afford it. Well, from my perspective, really, you can't afford not to have it. Organic foods are higher in nutrients, so overall you get more nutrient per pound or per dollar than you do, or euro, than you do if you're buying non-organic foods, okay? There have been some studies in the paper, you know, obviously by funded by certain non-organic food companies, which say that in fact there's no difference in the nutrition between different types of food.
But you can taste it.
You can taste it, you can feel it, and you know this is basically due to fiddling statistics or you know massaging them. You can prove anything with statistics, including that organic food is just as good for you as non-organic food. But this is obviously ridiculous, as you say, from an experiential point of view. So we want to go for organic foods. I mean, you can often see it in green foods, for instance. They're much greener, as you say. They taste much stronger. They have much more of a taste to them. So with all these foods, we want to go for organic versions. I'd say if you do have to choose, let's just say that you know you're not willing to, onions, garlic, foods like that, it's not as important that they're organic because at least they don't get sprayed with hardly any pesticides because they don't really need to be, so that's something going in their favour. And obviously you're better off buying foods that are non-organic if you do that actually have a skin on them which you can remove. So, for instance, you're far better off if you're going to buy something non-organic to buy organic, to buy non-organic avocado rather than non-organic spinach, because non-organic spinach has got nasty pesticide sprayed all over it. Avocado hasn't got that much because it's a tree anyway, and then you can peel it off.
Yeah.
So, you know, relatively. But I'm just saying that for the sake of those who do want to pick and choose, but I really want to say ideally, just buy things that are organic. Just say no to non-organic foods. Although, again, all these things are relative, you know, so... don't be put off, but don't think, oh, there's no point having a green juice if the only thing I've got in the house is some celery and cucumber that's not organic. Have it anyway. It's still good. It's just, it would be three times as good. It would have three times as much nutrition in it if it was non-organic. And it wouldn't have the pesticides and poisons in. So all these things are relative, you know. What we need to be aware of when we're entering this food is, I'm trying to make it as black and white as possible because it really simplifies things. I'm trying to say, this is good, you know, this is not. Because, you know, our minds largely work in this black or white binary fashion. And that's for the sake of simplicity and ease, and that's fine. But the reality is that there tends to be a scale from the best to the worst, you know.
Yeah.
So we should never get caught up in good or bad to the point where we chuck away the baby with the bathwater, as it were. Okay, so that's an excellent point with goji berries. That you would want to get organic ones, ideally. Next category I'd say is maca. Maca is a root from South America that's similar to a turnip. It's an adaptogen, which means that from a Taoist perspective, it works on the kidney system, the jing, which relates to sexuality, which is why it's also known as an aphrodisiac. It's likely to make you more potent, make you more strong. Now, it's an adaptogen. Do you know what an adaptogen means?
It helps your body acclimatise or adapt, shall we say?
Yeah, pretty much right, yeah. Stresses come along in this form of challenges in our lives, no matter what happens, no matter how much we try and avoid them, or no matter how much we embrace them. So our ability to survive is largely based on our ability to adapt to those challenges or to those stresses in life, rather than being overwhelmed by them. And that can be on a psychological sense, like being asked to do something you've never done before. It can be in a physical sense, like, say, having an extreme change of temperature. Now, on all these levels, an adaptogen helps you to, as you say, adapt and adjust and acclimatise more easily to that variance.
I've also heard it's quite high in calcium. I don't know whether that's true or not.
Maca, yeah. Yeah, all superfoods and all wild foods are going to be high in alkaline minerals. Calcium is definitely one of them. But I believe it's most of them.
Okay.
Like the magnesium, phosphorus, zinc, potassium. Sorry, phosphorus is acidic, but still, it's basically all the superfoods and wild food I'm going to be mentioning now are very high in minerals in general, which is one of the main benefits of them, absolutely. And it's good to mention calcium because a lot of people do worry about calcium, especially when they stop having dairy. But to be honest, calcium is not something that most people actually are deficient in. People are much more likely to suffer from a lack of magnesium, a lack of zinc, a lack of copper, a lack of iodine, a lack of selenium, a lack of molybdenum. These are going to be the things, a lack of manganese.
And the ironic thing is often you can drink as much milk as you like with calcium, but if you haven't got the magnesium to absorb the calcium, then it's just a waste anyway.
Absolutely, yes. So people tend to have a, these things. We need to take them together, especially for bone health.
Sure.
And in general as well, I mean, calcium relates to the contraction of a muscle, magnesium relates to relaxation of a muscle, so we need both of them. They're like a double act, exactly like you say. So if you're consuming foods which are really high in one and not the other, then you're having a problem. Green foods, I mean, all the green foods I mentioned are also really high in calcium.
Yeah.
Green leafy foods, but I didn't mention it, I only highlighted the magnesium because that's the thing that's really important.
Yeah.
Most people have a reasonable reserve of calcium. It's the magnesium that's chronically lacking.
But it's less known about, more people know about calcium and will worry about calcium.
Yeah, definitely. Very.
Being that's more advertised.
Very ironic.
Well, indeed.
Next category of superfood I'd like to introduce you to would be seaweeds. Now, the number one seaweed, are you aware of what that might be in terms of nutrition?
No.
Would definitely be kelp.
Okay. Yeah.
Which is good news because it's actually also the cheapest.
Okay.
There are some other seaweeds are nori, dulse, wakame, arame, hijiki.
Yeah. Although I heard about hijiki, it's normally farmed, so it's not actually as good.
Okay. I think what they would call it is wild crafted, so it's all seaweeds are wild to some extent, but they can be farmed as well.
Yeah,
if you see what I mean. So
okay.
they're cultivated but in a wild environment, which is known as wild crafted. But I agree, it's not the most optimum, but all seaweeds are optimal compared to most foods, and any seaweed that you actually
and
like.
And they are a massive, massive part of particularly being satisfied on a raw diet. I mean, nuts are very good for making you feel full, but seaweeds 10 times better. Right. Like, you crave, like, meat or... It's, yeah, I would say within a raw food diet, it's like the meat equivalent.
Oh, that's very interesting. I haven't heard that before.
It's often used because you can do it like a pasta and, like, you know, it's for the children. And also burgers. Fantastic. But dulse in the burgers or a mixture of seaweed, it just really gives it a really nice, meaty kind of texture and flavour.
Mm.
Makes you feel like, yeah, I've eaten.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I know the meat connection, but it makes a lot of sense because they are very, very satisfying and very, very highly nutritious. So what's good about seaweeds? Well, for one thing, they're really, really high in minerals, which are the things, the nutrients that of all of them we're probably most chronically deficient in. Especially high in magnesium, which we really need. Especially high in iodine, which we really need. And seaweeds, especially kelp and also bladderwrack to a lesser degree, are much higher in iodine than any other food by far. And iodine, as we mentioned before, is food for the thyroid gland. Thyroid gland being essential for all the metabolic processes of the body. It's kind of like the master gland that controls the immune system especially. So whenever the thyroid gland is under the weather, so the immune system too will be under the weather. As well as connecting to the adrenal glands, and whenever the adrenal glands are kind of taxed and exhausted, then so will the thyroid be. So basically if ever you're stressed or exhausted, you need to be eating iodine and selenium, which build up the thyroid, as much as you need to be consuming magnesium and salt and vitamin C, which build up the adrenals. You need to work at both of those. So best seaweed is probably kelp. Like I say, it's the cheapest as well. The most delicious, in my opinion, is probably going to be nori or dulse.
I'd say arame.
Arame, okay. Everyone's got their own opinion. Another thing which is really excellent about seaweed...
But really, don't be scared to experiment with it. Play with it as well.
Yeah, definitely. Another thing which is really amazing about seaweeds is that they're very high in something called polysaccharides. So I've talked a lot about the negative effect of sugars and how, you know, sugars are not that great. But there are a type of sugars which are actually essential, and they're called polysaccharides. Polysaccharides are where long chains of sugar are bound together rather than a simple sugar. The simplest sugar would be glucose. And the polysaccharides are where there's glucose mixed with fructose, long chains of sugar. So what that means is it takes the body a long time to break up that sugar into individual units of glucose, which means that rather than it all going in and creating a big blood sugar spike, your body just digests it slowly but surely. Polysaccharides also contain other slightly more mysterious elements called ormus, which are essential for all life, and they've been proven to be excellent for the immune system of a human being and helping them to fight off all sorts of diseases, even very serious ones like cancer or AIDS, stuff like that. So polysaccharides, essential sugars. So your essential sugars you're going to get in the form of berries, particularly goji or Incan berries. You're going to get in mushrooms as well, which we're going to talk about soon. And you're going to get in seaweeds. And the last thing I mentioned with seaweeds is also really high in a really healthy form of fibre, soluble fibre. So they've got the essential sugars, they've got soluble fibre, they're really high in minerals, and like you say, they're very, very satisfying too. So I recommend seaweeds of some form every day.
They also come in quite useful formats. I mean, I remember a little while ago I was reading a book about a Chinese detective story, and they kept going into these restaurants and having like beef noodles, and all I could think about was like beef noodles. And I went in there and we had sea spaghetti with like onions and tomatoes, and I made this fantastic spicy seaweed stew, taken off beef noodles in my book, and that was fine. I no longer craved it. It was fine. I had a big bowl of that, couldn't have eaten a thing else.
Yeah, maybe the similarity is the sodium, because a lot of people the meat that they want is the reason that they want meat is for salt. It's the same reason that a lot of people crave cheese. It's either going to be fat or salt that they want.
Yeah.
So if you just have some salt or fat, then often they're craving for cheese or craving for meat actually goes away.
Yeah.
So it's probably the sodium in the seaweed, especially if you're not having a lot of salt otherwise in your diet. Next category, I'll go for a very big category, which I'm only going to talk about briefly, so we'll do a separate conversation about it at some point, I'm sure, is mushrooms. Mushrooms are again really high in these things called beta-glucans, which are these polysaccharides, these complex sugars, which are essential, which are really good for the immune system.
Can I just say a selection of varieties of mushrooms, not generic button mushroom, surely.
Absolutely. I'm just going to mention some of the best ones now. You want the mushrooms which are immune supporting, so not the button mushrooms, but again, I'm not going to be talking about what we don't want. Shiitake mushrooms, they're excellent. They're available in most supermarkets or sort of Asian grocers. Maitake mushrooms as well. Oyster mushrooms. Chaga. Now, all those ones I just mentioned are ones that you can actually eat without having to boil them up for a long period of time. There's also reishi, cordyceps, coriolis, lion's mane, but these are mushrooms where they're quite woody and you have to boil them for a long time, and you could conceivably eat them as a soup if you were to boil them all day or a stew, something like that. But the way they're usually used is to boil them and then drink the liquid as a herbal tea. But with the few like shiitake or oyster, these are actually very edible, and you just need to, you can even eat them raw, but cook them for a short period of time. It's ideal not to eat them raw because they do carry some kind of funguses on them, and it's best to prepare them in some way. If you do want to have them raw, it's best to soak them in lemon juice and salt for a while just to make sure that they are truly clean. Shiitake and oyster as well have a very meaty texture, so again, they help to make up if you're missing any meat but you're deciding not to eat it because it's not optimal food. Next category is grasses. Now, within the superfood range, now grasses, they're massively nutritious. It might seem like a weird idea to be eating grass to a lot of people.
Yeah, let's just check. We're not talking about lawn grass. We're not cows.
We're not. Although a lot of wild grasses, to be perfectly honest, are actually perfectly decent. Now, obviously, I just want to make it clear with grasses, we're not actually going to eat them. The fibre is indigestible to a large degree to a human being anyway.
That's the reason cows have four stomachs to digest.
Exactly. But just because we can't digest them, or can't get a lot out of them anyway, doesn't mean that they're not a good idea. Things like wheatgrass, barley grass, nettle, also dandelion, although dandelion's edible. If we actually juice those, you need a special kind of juicer, a masticating juicer, as it's called, because it grinds the fibrous matter up rather than a centrifugal juicer, which is good enough for making a fruit smoothie a fruit juice. So you need like a wheatgrass juicer, basically. Grasses are incredibly nutritious. They are incredibly high, like seaweeds, and unlike almost all other foods, they contain, or potentially contain, depending on where they're grown and what they're grown with, all of the 92 atoms on the periodic table, every single mineral that you could possibly need, they contain in some degree. So that's really amazing. Nettle is amazing for all sorts of things. It's a kidney tonic, it's in the rejuvenate formula, but obviously in our sort of climates in the UK or in North America, you can pick it and consume it fresh if you juice it or even blend it. Absolutely delicious. Dandelion is immensely good for the kidney system and for the liver system. Now, barley grass and wheatgrass are juices that you can quite often get out and about. If you have a smoothie bar or something like that in your town, then quite often they have wheatgrass juice available as well. Have a couple of shots of that. It's really amazing. It's a really, really concentrated superfood. It's another thing about it.
You feel it, man. You are off your head.
Yeah, I mean, they're a very powerful effect on consciousness. I really agree. Make you fly, right?
Yeah.
And they also simultaneously, quite often, especially wheatgrass and barley grass, really clear you out in terms of the other end. And as we say, it's better out than in. So they really, a lot of the problem they have is that they've got a lot of waste matter kind of stuck in their intestines. And if you have like a large amount of wheatgrass or barley grass, especially if you're not used to it, it'll do a good job of just clearing that out, which you should definitely see as a good thing. Because, like I say, it's better out than in.
If anybody is embarking on this whole optimum world,
yes,
colonic irrigation, go for it. People are scared about it. They tell me, well, I can deal with that. That'd just be too embarrassing and blah, blah, blah. But it's like, what, you want to walk around with all that shit inside you? Are you crazy? My God, let it go. I know it's England and everything, but let it go. Let it go, people.
I totally agree.
It makes such a difference in just being able to... I could go on this about this for a long time, but just the absorption of the food that you're eating. Because if you're totally clogged and you've got no space in your intestines, no matter what you put in it, you can't even absorb it. And I think that's particularly if you are experiencing the desire to eat huge quantities of food, which even you think, you know what, this is crazy, I don't need to be eating this. It's because I would think that you can't actually absorb what you're putting in there.
I would agree with that, but there are some exceptions to that. There's certain foods which and drinks, which the very point of them is that even if your intestines are completely clogged up, you can still absorb the nutrients, like wheatgrass and barley grass.
Sure.
Like the tonic teas as well. Your body doesn't actually need to digest them because all the nutrients are just readily available. So you can just absorb the nutrients.
It's the bonus of juices as well.
And with juices as well, absolutely. So there are certain foods and drinks which you can absorb the nutrients in, but you're absolutely right. In general, the more clogged up your intestines and your digestive system is, or the spleen, as it's called from the Taoist point of view, the harder you're going to find it to get any of the benefit from any of these optimal foods.
And, I mean, for people out there trying to lose weight, some people lose, like, 2 stone after a colonic. It has been known to happen. Can you believe that? Amazing.
Yeah, I mean, they
but it does make you feel good. They and suddenly your stomach will be flat. Sorry, go ahead.
They are fantastic, but, you know, for those people who are not willing to, for whatever reason, to try something like that, I do just recommend that you eat the foods which naturally bring on that cleansing to some degree. Okay. So, like I say, green foods especially, like the grasses, like the green juices, and like the next foods which we'll go into, which will be the algae. So there's blue-green algae, chlorella, also spirulina. I personally think that blue-green algae and chlorella are superior, and that's been my experience, but if you get on with spirulina, that's also great. Not only are these foods incredibly nutritious, they're also able to be absorbed very easily, even if your digestive system is shot, even if your spleen is really weak and functioning very suboptimally, you'll still be able to absorb a lot of the goodness from these algae. So that's one of the benefits of them. They are fantastically high in minerals. Another amazing property is that they're very high in high quality, in other words, with all the essential amino acids, protein. So, in fact, they're higher than any other food. So, whereas meat or fish are normally sort of 25%, 30% protein at the most, chlorella and spirulina top off at 60% protein. So, really, really high protein food. And if you include these in your diet every day to some degree, then you never have to worry about any kind of protein deficiency. That's just it's just covered that base instantly. And so when people ask me where I get my protein, depending on my mood, I may explain to them that you don't really need that much protein. I may just say algae, you know, because they are the highest source of protein known to man. Either is a good and true answer. Chlorella, its particular high points are that it's incredibly high in chlorophyll. I believe it's around 10% chlorophyll, which is far, far higher than any other food. So all the benefits I talked about with that are amplified with chlorella. Chlorella is also amazing for the liver. It's one of the top foods for the liver and the gallbladder organ system. Amazing for cleansing the blood. It's so effective for the liver that I believe in a Japanese study, it was shown to reduce hangovers by 93%. So just a massive reduction in chlorella, with chlorella, because it is so powerful. It's also an excellent heavy metal detoxifier. And when you combine it with coriander, it has a special ability to remove heavy metals like mercury or cadmium. Mercury is the most common one, that especially the ones that are lodged in the brain. So when we have heavy metal poisoning, I mean, I won't go into that in any detail, but heavy metal poisoning sets off a chain reaction where all the other systems are compromised and thrown out of balance to one degree or another. And until we get those heavy metals out, it doesn't matter how much good stuff we get in, we're never going to be functioning optimally. So any foods which are optimally healthy and yet simultaneously help to clean out any of that those heavy metals, which also the sulfur containing foods, which is why I mentioned those before, then that's a bonus. So that's why chlorella is a food that I personally recommend that you eat every day. If it's something that you can't stand the taste of or whatever, then they come in the form of capsules. Or if you could throw it into something else, just in a very small amount, and so it's not noticeable.
In fact, can I just say here, raw chocolate is a fantastic way to sneak these things in. Because if you put a little bit... Now, I have made the mistake of really going for the spirulina with the raw chocolate, and then you just ruin the whole batch of raw chocolate because it just tastes as spirulina. However, if you're clever about it, you can get a hell of a lot of superfoods into a bar of chocolate when you make it yourself. And then you quite happily munch a lot.
Definitely, yeah. Like some of the medicinal mushrooms as well, at least in their extract form. You can put in maca, goji. And let me just talk about blue-green algae briefly. So the blue pigment in blue-green algae, I think called phycocyanin, is really amazingly beneficial. It also contains PEA again, the same substance that we talked about earlier, which gives you that bliss sort of feeling. I believe there was a study in South America where they gave 100 school children just a gram or two a day of this stuff for a certain period of time. I think it was 3 months. And all the children who had learning difficulties had perfectly adequate approach to learning by the end of this 90-day period or 100-day period. So, in other words, all the sort of kids who were struggling, basically, when they had this, they were suddenly able to, you know, function properly, understand them during lessons, able to get, you know, decent scores in tests. So, blue-green algae, you know, if you now take a multivitamin, I would recommend that, you know, get rid of the multivitamin, have the blue-green algae instead. You know, it's that sort of range. It contains a bit of everything that's good for you, a bit of everything that's useful for you. Marine phytoplankton is another food that's along those lines. Marine phytoplankton contains everything good that we've already talked about, as well with the other algaes. It's not really an algae, but it's in that category. As well as being really high in omega-3 of the long chain kinds, which are really beneficial for people in which they're normally chronically deficient in. So that's EPA and DHA. These are beneficial for so many things, but one of the main things that they're well known for is for increasing intelligence, memory, brain function in general. Marine phytoplankton also contains direct energy, so pure chi, basically, from a Taoist point of view, a substance which in science you call ATP. So rather than you taking in calories and your body having to burn them and turn them into energy, it just contains energy, just straight away, just there. Nice. Straight away available to you. So very handy and, in my opinion, the best pick-me-up of all, you know, yeah. Rather than having a stimulant which then releases gin, which you have a limited supply of. Why not just take in pure chi into your body, pure energy? It's just completely cutting out the middleman. So I would say that's the most ideal form.
Am I right in thinking they're the same thing that whales eat?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, there's all sorts.
But if they can keep a massive whale like that just floating about, I'm sure it'd keep me bouncing around.
Well, yeah. I mean, they're food for the brain and nervous system as well, which makes them gin and kidney building, right into the kidney organ system. I mean, as you say, the size of a whale's brain and nervous system is absolutely ginormous. You know, and that is built entirely out of krill and phytoplankton. Mm. Krill, I'll talk about. We'll talk about supplements because they're not a food as such. They're more something that you get a supplement form of. But yeah, marine phytoplankton are amazing. Like you say, if it's good enough for a whale or a dolphin, it's good enough for me. Mm. Almost at the end, I'll just mention a few other superfoods. Bee products in general. Bee products, we're talking about honey, talking about bee pollen, talking about royal jelly.
I got to say, bee pollen I do enjoy, particularly in raw chocolate again. Fantastic for the flavour. Also smoothies.
Yep.
Love it in smoothies. Can eat a lot of it. Isn't it one of the most complete foods on available?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it contains all your essential amino acids again, so it's a complete protein. It's quite high in carbohydrate, but I forgive it for that because it's so nutritious in so many other ways. It contains most of the minerals that you need again.
And it's so beautiful. They're like little, it's like a little bowl of gems. They're all multicoloured from all the different flowers that have been pollinated. And
yeah.
Yeah, beautiful.
Yeah, it's amazing to think just how many flowers have gone into that bag or container of bee pollen that you buy. It's just incredible.
Yeah, we've got to show love to the bees.
In terms of honey, raw, when I say honey, I really must emphasise raw honey. So raw honey is the highest enzyme food in the world. Enzymes being those living electrical charges which allow your food to be digested optimally.
Particularly manuka?
Manuka is an example of really high quality raw honey, yep. But there are other ones as well. Manuka is excellent, although in my opinion probably overpriced considering other honeys have a similar benefit.
And it's been flown from New Zealand.
Yeah, so not ideal for the carbon footprint. If you can get local raw honey. So raw honey, also, I would add, you would want wild honey. It's much more preferable to cultivated honey. If the honey comes from fields like, say, for example, clover, that's not nearly as ideal as if it comes from a forest where bees are feeding on wildflowers.
Sure.
So raw, wild honey. And how can you tell if honey's raw? It's not easy, to be honest, but it needs to say on there that it is raw, unpasteurised, cold-pressed, enzymes intact, and then you can just about trust it. But again, if it doesn't say that it is all those things, then it's probably not. So raw honey, luckily, is becoming more and more available in this day and age.
Yeah, there are some good companies that do it these days.
Aloe vera is another superfood, which I really love and I recommend people have every day. Really high in polysaccharides, again, which are these essential sugars. Really soothing, really cooling, very yin, very soothing for the digestive system. Really good at getting you going as well if you have any constipation or you have blockages in the intestines. It's really good at undoing those. If your intestines are damaged or worn away by eating foods which are harsh on them, like, say, wheat, gluten is very harsh in the digestive tract, aloe vera helps to soothe and heal the whole digestive tract. So, amazingly powerful superfood. People will think it's weird when I cut a bit of a leaf of my pot plant and cut it up and put it on my salad, but it's, you know, amazing. One of the other beneficial things about it is that it's a live food as well, you know, so you're literally getting a plant that's alive there growing on your table. Take a bit, cut it off, so it still contains that vitality because it hasn't been processed. Which brings up an important point. When I say aloe vera, I don't mean those bottles that you buy, you know, aloe vera juicing or whatever. They're processed to hell, not worth your time. Only ever fresh, whole plant aloe vera. That's the only thing that's really worth your money.
And to be fair, if you've ever tried to put some aloe vera through a masticating juicer, you'll realise quite how processed that is. Because it's actually a very clear liquid that you buy in those jars. It's essentially this, like, water.
Yep.
Whereas actually, if you try and put it through a juicer,
you think, where's the slime?
It just bubbles and slimes, just slimes everywhere.
Yeah, top tip for the day: don't juice your aloe vera.
No, just eat it.
You can peel the skin off. In fact, that's what's recommended to do. But to be honest, I quite often don't, and don't seem to have any problem with it. If you have a sensitive digestion, then it's more ideal to just eat the gel inside. The bigger leaves are better to eat as well than the smaller leaves, and the more plump and fat they are, the nicer they are. Coming towards the end, another category of food which is a superfood is fermented foods. So fermented foods are really high in something called probiotics. Probiotics are beneficial bacteria, and this deserves a whole other conversation, but very briefly, your body, the health of your intestine, your body's health depends largely on the health of your intestines. And your intestine's health depends largely on the balance of beneficial bacteria to harmful bacteria. So with a lot of people, there should be a balance of 80% beneficial bacteria to 20% harmful, and then generally you're okay. But for most people, it's the other way around. They've got 80% harmful, 20% beneficial. So there's a lot of things you can do to change that balance. One of them is to stop feeding the harmful bacteria, and they largely feed on sugars and proteins. And there's a lot of approaches you can take. One of the best approaches is to just add a load of beneficial bacteria, otherwise known as probiotics. Now, when I talk about probiotic foods, I'm not talking about those little sugary yogurt drinks that you buy. They're sugar, dairy, and they only contain one or two probiotics. I mean raw sauerkraut that you can buy or make yourself. I mean kombucha, which is another probiotic food, fermented. Kombucha is spelled K-O-M-B-U-C-H-A. Has a huge amount of health benefits. It's a traditional Taoist food where you get tea and sugar, believe it or not, and actually ferment it with something called a SCOBY, which is a combination of fungus and yeast, although it's often referred to as a mushroom. And they actually convert the caffeine, the sugar, into these beneficial bacteria, which you then drink. Another thing is kefir, which is milk, often goat's milk, which is fermented with small kefir grains and turns it into a sort of sour kind of yogurty type substance, which is genuinely healthy. These are probably the most well-known fermented foods. Kimchi is another one, which is traditional Korean dish similar to sauerkraut, only rather than just cabbage or carriage and carrot like sauerkraut, it will contain lots of different foods including chilies. If you want to make your own sauerkraut, I'm going to do a a feature about how to do that at some point soon. But if you're going to buy sauerkraut, just bear in mind, again, it's got to be raw. It's got to be unpasteurised. Not because I'm the raw guy and that's what I'd say, but because if you heat up any of these fermented foods, sauerkraut included, if you pasteurise them, which is heating them, then you kill off all the beneficial bacteria. And so far, it's completely pointless eating it. It's had all the goodness removed.
Also, let me just say, give these things a chance, because it is a certain taste. I mean, when I first tried kombucha, I was like, what are you all crazy? Absolutely love it. Now it's fine. Same with sauerkraut. Never really got past the, are you crazy with the kefir? But, you know, never really gave it a chance. But, yeah, do give these things a chance, because they grow on you.
Yes, absolutely. And that's true for all of these things. Like I said, it takes your body a month to get used to any of this stuff. And especially when you start eating high probiotic food, you may start feeling intestinal discomfort and maybe gas or wind or something like that. And don't see that as a sign to begin with anyway that there's a problem. It's basically, there's probably going to be a little bit of a battle or warfare going on between the beneficial bacteria arriving and the old guard, the harmful bacteria which are already in there. So there's going to be some stuff going on, basically. So just stick with it, and after a while, things do settle down. You'll feel a lot better as a result of it.
And in fact, I actually use sauerkraut as a digestive, shall we say. You know, if I'm having something like burgers that are dehydrated, that I know my body's going to struggle with a little bit just because of the low water content and the high density of the food, I'll have it with sauerkraut on the side, or a load of sauerkraut. And that will help me digest. Same with kombucha. If I feel like I've eaten too much or anything like that, have some kombucha. It's like mulches down whatever's in your stomach, and there you're away to go.
It's an excellent point. And, you know, in a lot of cultures, it's traditional to eat like a small portion of fermented food with every meal or drink it for that very reason, because it does really help you digest it so much better. And lastly, the last superfood I'm going to mention today is coconut. Coconut butter, especially coconut water, not so much coconut cream or desiccated coconut. Coconut jelly as well from young coconuts, but mainly coconut butter and coconut water. So coconut butter is a saturated fat, but unlike most saturated fats, it is very healthy, very good for you. It's a different type of saturated fat called medium chain triglycerides. What they are is they are an excellent fuel for the body. So we talk about getting used to burning fats rather than sugars. A lot of people, especially if their livers are a bit sluggish, may find that quite hard going. So of all the fats, raw coconut butter, cold pressed coconut butter, is one of the easiest to digest as a fuel. So it's also really delicious, got a really delicious consistency, very good for food preparation.
Yeah,
right?
Fantastic, particularly for desserts.
It's also antifungal, antiviral, antibacterial. It's got all these benefits again. So
superb as a beautifying thing for instead of skincare. Yeah. You know, forget about your creams and your whatnot. Just use that as an oil and a massage oil. Fantastic. Perfect.
Absolutely. And in fact, with most of these products like shampoos and conditioners, when you look in there, it will have ingredients like sodium lauryl sulfate, sodium lauryl, this, that, and the other. And all these things are basically cocodamol. All these things are basically coconut extracts. So out of half of the really chemical-sounding ingredients in your average bottle of shampoo, half of them are just extracts from coconut. So why not cut out the middleman and not pay a shocking amount for something that's heavily filled with all sorts of other chemicals which are bad for you, and just use coconut?
Saying that, my hair does look very greasy if I rub coconut oil in it. I do get your point.
Yeah, I mean, my friend uses it to gel his hair, and he really loves it.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah, he really likes it.
If I could rock that look, I would.
But yeah, I mean, we're talking about foods here. So as a food product, it's amazing source of fuel. Coconut water is the last thing as well. Coconut water is very similar to human blood or human plasma particularly. It contains an almost identical electrolyte balance, so it's really excellent for any athletes, anyone who's interested in endurance.
It's also incredibly hydrating.
Incredibly hydrating, again, because of those electrolytes, yeah.
Just if you're dehydrated, like, hangover again, bottle of coconut water. But again, not rubbish quality. It's got to be, what's that, There's one in particular where it's kept in the dark and
yeah, the brand I think you're talking about is Dr. Martens.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah, so that's a good brand that we get in the UK. I'm not sure if that's available in the US as well. But make sure, again, as with all these things, it's only really useful if it's unpasteurised, which not heated to very high temperatures. Which reminds me, one other thing about coconut butter is that if you're going to... All optimal foods, or especially all optimal fats, are raw. But if you're going to heat any fat, I would definitely use coconut butter, because out of all the fats, it's least easily destroyed by heat. It will withstand even fairly high temperatures and not be that badly affected by those high temperatures. Unlike the omega-3 oils like flax oil or hemp oil, which is totally and utterly ruined and deranged and made very bad for you by heating at all. So a lot of people say to me, well, what about olive oil? And I say, okay, olive oil's okay. It's a monounsaturated fat to cook with, but it's still not nearly as good as coconut butter. And if someone happens to not like coconut butter, I'd say the second choice is probably going to be butter, as in dairy butter. Not olive oil. Olive oil was okay, but not good. It's not optimal in any way. So that's if you're going to cook with these foods. So I think we've come to the end of my list of very basic foods. So like I say, you know, out of those, there's hundreds of foods within those categories. And just find those, try them out, find the ones that you actually like, stick with them, and you'll find that your health just transforms. And especially with a focus on the superfoods, because they are really highly densely nutritious. A focus on making sure you have some green leafy vegetables every day, even if it's only in the form of juicing. Have some kind of green juice every day, preferably. Cucumber celery is excellent, but anything pretty much can be juiced eventually. Some kind of berry every day, whether it be goji or camu or amla for vitamin C or blackberry or strawberry or whatever. Have some kind of fatty fruit every day, like avocado or olives, maybe durian. Have some kind of citrus fruit every day, I would say, ideally, like lemon, lime, grapefruit. Have some kind of nuts or seeds every day, except for if you're cleansing or detoxing. Preferably seeds. Make sure you get your omega-3s and your omega-6s out of the seeds that we mentioned. And then some sort of form of superfoods as well. Whichever ones suit you, basically. And that's it. I mean, that should give you enough to get on with. So, remember, eat abundantly, enjoy what you eat, eat optimally, realise that your body is your temple and the building blocks of that temple are the foods you eat. Realise also it's never too late, that no matter what food you may have eaten in the past to create your temple is constantly being rebuilt. So if you start now, from now on you only eat optimum foods, or at least the majority of foods you eat are optimum foods, then slowly but surely you'll find your temple transformed to a thing of absolute beauty and worship, which you'll feel very grateful and fortunate to have. Thank you very much for interviewing, and
thank you very much for your wealth of knowledge.
It's been a pleasure, and see you next time.